Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your mother f***ing ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 209 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of July 6th, 2018. I am Chris Randazzo and joining me tonight is invisible co-host Dan Ryan. Dan? Dan, come in! Dan! Dan! Dan is currently intangible, so I'm going to be going solo this evening. But before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the words Stone Age Gamer in the subject line, and you can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello because we always want to hear from you, the listener. So, here we are. Dan had a family thing come up at the very last possible moment, so this is probably going to be a relatively shorter episode than usual because it's just me, but we'll see how much I can ramble on my own. I've got a few things to talk about. Things should return to normal next week, so let's just get right down to it. First things first, I wanted to do a quick plug again for Garden State Comic Fest, which is happening this weekend, July 7th and 8th. I should have a calendar in front of me. July 7th and 8th, I believe, is this coming Saturday and Sunday at the Menin Arena in Morristown, New Jersey. My partner, Evan, is one of the showrunners, and it's always a great con to be at. I am going to be on a panel at that show, speaking with Evan and another gentleman by the name of Sal Crivelli from Comic Pop, a popular YouTube channel. We're going to be talking about what it's like trying to make a name for yourself in the world of geek culture content creation, this silly thing that we do on the internet for some reason. I'm also going to be selling a bunch of my own personal stuff from my collection at the Geekade table, and my wife is going to be selling her video game related cross stitching things, Shoot the Moon, she's calling her stitching group thing. It's not a group, it's just her, but she's done some pretty rad cross-stitchy stuff, so come take a look if you're in town. If you're going to be in around the area of Morristown, New Jersey this weekend, come by, say hi, I'll be there, and I'm sure a couple other Geekade folks will be there too. Oh, let's see what's next on the list of things to discuss today. I did want to quick touch on a few games that I've been playing lately. We actually haven't done a show in a couple of weeks because we did the panel, which was last week's episode, but that actually, we recorded that like a couple of days after we recorded the last episode. I'm going to bring up a couple of these things again when Dan's on the show again next week, but I wanted to just do a quick mention about a couple of games I've been playing, particularly Runner 3 and Bomb Chicken. I've had a lot to say about Runner 3 on the show, and I just recently wrote a blog on the Stone Age Gamer blog about kind of how I felt about the games towards the end of playing that game, and I don't know that I did a very good job of articulating my thoughts in that article, so I kind of wanted to give it another shot. So the original Bit Trip Runner was a game that just completely absorbed my being when it came out. I was so completely obsessed with most of the Bit Trip series, to be honest with you, but particularly Runner was just a complete addiction for me. It was a revelation. It was it kind of came from a time when games like that were so few and far between. As a gamer, my formative years and the kinds of games that speak to me more than anything in the world have always been two-dimensional games. The Super Nintendo is my favorite era. I loved the games there. And then post-Super Nintendo, unless you were playing on a handheld, and even then, the quality of a lot of that stuff was kind of in the air. That kind of gaming, especially on consoles, more or less disappeared. You know, you had stuff like Symphony of the Night on PlayStation, and you know, even a couple of things like Bug or whatever or Astle on Sega Saturn, and these games were very cool, but they were so few and far between. By and large, the games that were being made at that time on consoles were, you know, big 3D experimental things that I just never really cared for. So when the 360, PS3, and Wii era happened, and their online shops existed, and you started to see some games that were, you know, some indie titles, and these are the kinds of games that people had been playing on PCs for a while, but as a non-PC gamer myself, I missed out on a lot of that. And when the Bit Trip series came out, I was just so enthralled with it, and you know, finally getting to play stuff like Cave Story, or you know, even La Mulana and Geometry Wars. So these kinds of like really great throwback experiences that were kind of more based around simple fun were starting to come back. It was really something special. And then you saw more of that kind of stuff on the Wii U, which is actually I'm going to be talking a bit more about the Wii U in a little bit. But that was something that I really liked that Nintendo was willing to do in the end of the Wii era and a bit on the Wii U as well, is just this, let's just make new games that are like the classic games, where you had stuff like, I mean, just earlier this year, I was playing a Kirby Star Allies, which for all the flaws in that game, that is it's a relatively big budget, big name 2D platformer on a modern game console. And that's not unheard of these days, not by a long shot. And that, when those kinds of games came back, it was a real rush for me. But getting back to the point, Runner 2 was just so amazing for me on the Wii U. God, I love Runner 2 with every fiber of my being. When Runner 3 was going to come out, it was one of my most anticipated games because Runner 1 and 2 were absolute revelations for me. I could not put those games down. I love so much about them. So when Runner 3 came out and a couple of the reviews started hitting before I was able to get my hands on the game, talking about how much of a disappointment it was, I was kind of disheartened. And then I played it and I kind of agreed with them. And I think I said on the show a couple weeks ago that I agreed that it was the biggest disappointment of the year. And to an extent, I can still kind of say that I agree with that, just because there are some really big missed opportunities in Runner 3. But the things that I thought were complete bull were actually really awesome for me. The expectation was I was going to finish that game. And when I finished it, that was going to be the end of it. I wasn't going to go back and try to like do gem runs and unlock all the puppets and all the other weird stuff in the game. But I started having so much fun towards the end of this game. With the levels were getting really challenging, and there's still a bunch of cheap deaths and whatnot. But the final boss battle against the Timbletot actually takes place in the Bit Trip, which is really probably this game's biggest missed opportunity, is that there isn't a world where you get to go back and see all the crazy camera angles and neat tricks that they do with Runner 3 visually in the Bit Trip, because it's such a wonderful Atari-inspired world. But I was having so much fun with it, and my kids were having so much fun watching me play it, that I decided to just kind of give it a shot real quick. I'm like, all right, well, you know what? It's been a couple of weeks since I've played, you know, World 1. I'm going to go back and try to hit these gem runs. And then I did not put this game down. Everything else went on hold while I went through and did every single gem run. I every stage, went through all of them, and then I started doing all the hero quests so I could unlock all the characters, and then I went back and found all the puppets so that I could watch all the puppet shows, and it was so much fun. I was so completely addicted, and since I now knew where all the little cheap deaths were, the things that jumped out at you that were originally really bothered me about the game, that stuff no longer bothered me because I had seen it all before. And now I was just experiencing these same levels from these different perspectives. The different paths really do add a layer that I wasn't expecting them to. They do kind of feel like new levels. And while it would be cooler if there were was at least one more world to explore, if there was just one more world that was the Bit Trip, I think I would really forgive every other fault in this game. I really think I would. But man, by the time I finished all this stuff, I didn't want to put the game down. And fortunately for me, I found out, I accidentally discovered a character token in the game. It had Uncle Dill on one side and what looked like a, you know, little thing from Bit Trip Beat on the other side. And it just kind of shows up on the title screen and then disappears. And I found it completely by accident. So I looked it up to see if there were more of them, and it turns out there's a character token, like find out what they were, not if there were more, just to see what the heck they were, and I discovered that there's a whole set of character tokens in the game. I never in a billion years would have found these things on my own. They're so incredibly hidden. I found a Reddit thread that actually had detailed where they all were, and that it was some of the most fun I had with the game was going in there and doing these just surgical precision platforming bits to get these medallions, these character tokens. And they're so cool. They're just these spots in the game where you really have to think, change the way you think about the levels, because they do this thing where you can change paths by pressing the L and R buttons, and you can do that on the fly, and they're just hidden paths in these stages, and there's visual cues to all of them. It's like the one that I found on my own, I missed a jump, and then I saw a springboard, like way out past where it would even be remotely possible to get to, and so I tried that one more time, and I landed on a set of invisible platforms, and I ran right out to it, got the character token, I was like, what the heck was that? there's one where you have to like go into a doll's mouth, and they spit you out in this other like super hard. There's so much cool stuff in this game. It's really, I wasn't expecting to find that level of obsession that I did before, and I'm so happy that I did, because that was the feeling that I was kind of missing my first run through this game. And then going back and finding all that hidden stuff was just wonderful. I am done with it now. I am not going to try to do the impossible levels more than every now and then I'll hit one just to see if I can get through it. But those levels are just nuts. I finished the first one and it was quite an accomplishment. I did it with all the gold bars because I refused to beat a level without collecting all the gold. And I've gotten pretty far in the second one, but those levels are, they're on a whole different level as far as difficulty is concerned. They remind me of things like the B-sides and C-sides in Celeste, where it's like, I can definitely see why somebody would want to do this, but I just don't have the time. There's so many other games for me to play, and it stops being fun because they all look the same. All the impossible levels, no matter what world you're in, they all have the exact same background and music. So there's not a lot of incentive for me to go back and do them other than just, you know, checking them off a checklist. There's also the retro levels, which I'm not crazy about. They're all right, but there are better precision platformers on the Switch for than me to kind of mess around with these stages. They are very well designed. I really think the art style is very cool. It's got this kind of wacky, almost Cuphead-esque artwork to it. Not nearly as impressive as Cuphead, obviously, but really cool stuff. But I don't like the music at all, especially in the first world. I don't like it even a tiny bit. It was that really turned me off to wanting to play through those. But I completed the first two worlds of the retro levels, and then I got to the third world, and I just kind of decided to tag out because I wasn't having nearly as much fun as I was with the actual runner levels, because they play intrinsically different. They're not in runner, Commander Video is just running on his own, and that's the kind of game that this is. And these games and these retro levels, you just control him like a platformer. You move him left to right and walk and dash, and they're good, but they're not, they don't feel like they have the same level of special as the rest of the game does. So I just wanted to take the time to say that Runner 3 turned out to be almost everything I wanted it to be, and I am now just so incredibly happy with my purchase and so incredibly happy that I played through it. And I really hope that they make a fourth one someday, because there actually is like the story is left open-ended, more or less, for there to be more. And there's so much love put into this game, and I can't wait to see what they do with it as far as supporting it with updates. I did read that they're working on a big update for it that includes an easy mode for some people, because the difficulty was something that a lot of folks are complaining about, and one of the reasons that I can't recommend this game to everybody, because it is brutally and often unfairly difficult, and that's not easy for me to recommend to a lot of people who don't want that kind of challenge. So I really can't wait to see where this goes. I also wanted to mention Bomb Chicken, because I feel super lucky to be one of the few people that's actually playing this game right now. A few weeks ago, it showed up on the eShop as something that was available for pre-purchase, and just seeing this game way back on the Nindies Direct back in March, I knew immediately that this was something I wanted to get. And so I did the pre-purchase, and then it disappeared off the eShop, and they announced the release date was officially going to be July 12th. And I was like, oh man, the preload thing said it was coming out on June 29th. That's a bummer. I was really hoping to get this. And then June 29th rolled around and it unlocked on my system. So I haven't seen anybody else really talking about this online. So I've been, you know, posting a couple of videos on my Twitter feed and just talking about how much I love this game because it's so good. It's so good. It's another... I can't really call it a precision platformer, but it's just got this wonderful personality to it. It's extremely well animated. It's just really goofy and really clever because it's a platformer where you don't jump. You lay bombs instead of eggs, and the more bombs you lay, that they lay directly underneath you, so you kind of use them as platforms because you can't jump. You just kind of launch yourself up, elevate yourself by laying more bombs, but the bombs hurt you if they explode. It's all one hit kills, and most of the game is pretty straightforward. I don't want to say straightforward. It is it's very clever but very manageable. I think I'm towards the end of the game now because I haven't stopped playing it. I play it every chance I get, the levels are getting really, really, really tricky now. Really, really complicated, where I'm on these stages where there's this blue goop everywhere that if you plant a bomb and it explodes anywhere on the blue goop, a trail of explosions will kind of like roll along all the edges until it runs out of screen or runs out of blue goop to explode against. And it just adds this crazy extra layer of things you have to manage. You have to really, really get good at multitasking and paying attention to all of your surroundings for these last couple of levels. I do want to talk a lot more with Dan about this game, because I think he would like it too, because it's just really, really freaking good. So, Runner 3, Bomb Chicken, really, really great games for the Switch. I heartily recommend them if you enjoy a good challenge. The challenge more so on Runner 3. Bomb Chicken, I recommend to everybody. If you like chickens and bombs and platformers, then buy this freaking game. It's so good. I wrote a bunch about it for the Strange Gamer blog this week. I'm hoping to get that edited and posted on Thursday. So it will be up the day before this podcast goes live. So yes, heartily recommend. As soon as I finish Bomb Chicken, it's back to Blossom Tales. And then after Blossom Tales, it's back to West of Loathing, because those two games are also just exceptional. And I can't stress how much I love them enough. They're both just really, really great games. This year has been very weird with sort of a lack of big name titles that I'm super excited to play. I did just buy Wolfenstein, but I'm probably not going to get to it until after I get to Horizon on PlayStation 4, which was a game that came out last year. But there hasn't been a lot of, as far as I can tell, on any of the platforms, any like really big tentpole games that have just really lived up to expectations. But the indie scene is rocking my world this year. I could not possibly be a happier gamer having played through. I mean, just this year alone, I've hit off the top of my head, Celeste and Dandara were just so good, just really left big impressions on me. And now Runner 3 and Bomb Chicken and West of Loathing and Blossom Tales. I think Blossom Tales came out last year. I only bought it this year, but regardless, I'm having a great year with video games, and there's just still plenty more to come. So here's hoping that I can take the time to finish all the games that are on my plate. All right, so let's see. I got a bit of listener mail from Rob Metzger, and I thought this was a really interesting question. I was going to answer him on Twitter, and then I decided that mentioning it on the show would be a better forum because I have a lot more thoughts than I could fit into a simple Twitter post. So Rob wrote, I own all Nintendo systems except for Wii U. Is it worth picking one up when a lot of the games are being ported to Switch? Also, how much would you pay for one if you didn't own one already? All right, so this question is kind of, I guess my answer is multi-pronged. From a practicality standpoint, depending on how much you like going back to older games, the Switch is a wonderful platform to have because the Wii U is a Wii, except with an HDMI output. So the Wii games that you can't really that are only, you know, exclusive to that platform. I'm talking about, you know, the Mario Galaxy titles, Punch-Out, Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword. These are tremendous. There's a lot of really, really good Wii titles, and having them on a platform with native HDMI is quite nice. So that's really cool. It was also a great platform because of the Wii Virtual Console, but unfortunately that's now closed. So you missed that window, which is very unfortunate if you don't already have all that stuff on your Wii. Now, if you do have, you said you had all the Nintendo systems, and you have a Wii, and you have a ton of those games, you can actually transport all that content that's on your Wii to your Wii U, and every time you switch over to Wii mode, which is kind of backwards, it's not backwards compatible. There's literally Wii hardware in there. It literally just switches to Wii mode. Like, you hit an icon on the main screen, and then it boots up the Wii menu. So it's just like having a Wii, two systems in one. It actually completely and totally makes the Wii obsolete. So, I mean, I don't have my Wii hooked up anywhere. There's no reason to. My Wii U has that covered for me. So, compatible with all the controllers for the Wii. It is not backwards compatible with GameCube, of course. That is one good thing. If you happen to have a Wii that has component cables, that's a great way to play, because GameCube component cables are stupid expensive. The Wii component cables is a really nice way of playing your GameCube games with the progressive scan and all that other jazz, because a lot of those games were actually programmed with that in it. So from that perspective, the Wii U is a really nice HDMI compatible Wii. So that's cool. The system itself, you know, it makes for a nice Netflix player. Having the touch screen for the second screen experience with things like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Video is nice. It does have all those video players built in. It's not much of a game changer in that respect, but it is still nice, and it is still being supported. It also does have a great virtual console, and that virtual console does include a lot of games that didn't show up on the original Wii. We're talking about things that are very expensive to get the original carts for Super Nintendo, things like Demon's Crest, things like Mega Man 7, Earthbound, for example. I mean, there are some really, really good quality content on the Wii Virtual the Wii U Virtual Console, and a lot of cool stuff available for download on the Wii U that isn't available on Switch yet. Even things like Runner 2, for example, or other games that things like Little Inferno, for example, that were really designed around things like the Wii Remote, and they technically work on the Switch with the gyro sensor and whatnot, but it's not the same as IR. So there are definitely some experiences for the Wii U that are exclusive to Wii U that have not translated to the Switch very well because of the basic hardware differences there. Super Mario Maker is such a great game, and the actual level creation works on the Wii U. Is probably the best proof of concept for the Wii U that there has ever been, because it's this little portable handheld thing with the stylus for actually creating levels, and then looking at that and then looking at the screen. It's one of those situations that is so perfectly suited to the uniqueness of that console. And I guess that's where the other piece of this puzzle comes in. A lot of this Wii U's best games have been ported to Switch. There's no question about that. But there are also a lot of Wii U games that either have not been ported to Switch yet or probably never will. Let's running down the list here. There are the two HD remakes of the Zelda games, Wind Waker HD and Twilight Princess HD. I would venture a guess that someday those will show up on Switch, because neither of those games uses the second screen in any true meaningful fashion. I mean, I know a lot of people liked the touchscreen item equipping in Wind Waker HD, but I never used it myself. I played the whole game with the Pro Controller. I did love having that second screen always open as a map, but as much as that was convenient, I never had a problem with that on the GameCube version. So those games would work on Switch, but they aren't currently available on Switch, so that's kind of cool. New Super Mario Bros. U does not get the recognition it deserves. It is an excellent 2D Mario platformer. It's easily, in my opinion, the best of the new Super Mario Bros. Games. which I know isn't an extraordinarily high bar, but there's some real cleverness and real thought put into Super Mario Bros. U. I've gone back to it a couple of times, and it does hold up. And it's also pretty inexpensive at this point, if I remember correctly. And then there's the new Super Luigi U DLC thing that you can now buy a disc that has all that just kind of built in. And that's really great stuff. Nintendo Land is a very fun multiplayer game. If you have other people around that you want to play local multiplayer with, Nintendo Land is really one of the best party games out there. It's extraordinary. Pikmin 3 is another thing that hasn't left the system. The original Splatoon is more or less replaced by Splatoon 2, so I guess that's not really a huge deal. I mentioned Super Mario Maker, that's great. Super Mario 3D World is a really, really, really good game. It's very unique. The 3D World and 3D Land play like a great combination of the 2D and 3D Mario games. It's not Super Mario Odyssey, but it's not new Super Mario Brothers either. 3D World's a really, really good game that deserves all the recognition in the world. Star Fox Zero, for all of its insanity, when it works, it does work really well. So if you're a big Star Fox fan, that's really cool. And Star Fox Guard's pretty cool too. I've only played a very little of it, but Star Fox Guard came with Star Fox Zero. You're going to be able to get that stuff super cheap because nobody wants it. And it's not as bad as I think the world made it out to be. It is kind of a mess, but boy, when it works, you can tell the DNA is there, and it's a really unique and fun experience. Wonderful 101 is another. It's a Platinum Games situation. It's really, really cool. Yoshi's Woolly World is an X. It's the first worthy successor to Yoshi's Island for Super Nintendo. If you liked that game like I do, totally worth your time. I know a lot of people loved Xenoblade Chronicles X. The Xenoblade Chronicles series just clearly isn't for me, but it is still really, it's still a cool game. On a similar token, the weird Fire Emblem Shin Megami Tensei crossover that was all about like J-pop and stuff. Something Sharp FE. God, I can't remember the name of that game. But that's supposed to be a really unique and interesting thing. There isn't a crazy huge library for the Wii U, but what is there is solid and really, really interesting, and such a strange situation for Nintendo, because a lot of the games that were really good on the Wii U are just genuinely really good, and they showcase Nintendo in a very weird position where they were making some real quality content that people weren't buying because the system itself was problematic. In a way, it kind of reminds me of the Virtual Boy in that respect, where the Virtual Boy, I think, has a pretty solid library. I mean, just the games that I like on the Virtual Boy, I really like Wario Land and Mario Clash and Mario Tennis, 3D Tetris. They're really fun games that people put a lot of effort into, but because the system was so bananas, they never really got the playtime. So now, obviously, Smash Ultimate is coming out later this year, so Smash for Wii U is probably going to be void, replaced when Smash Ultimate comes out. But, Smash for Wii U is incredible. It's got such a great cast of characters. There's a lot of really great games that aren't on Switch that I think make this system worth your time. And if it's something that you want to go back to, because again, if you're like me, I have my hands more than full with the Switch. More than full. So I don't have a lot of reason to switch on my Wii U from time to time. And the other day I turned on the original Bit Trip Runner because my son wanted to see what the original looked like. So that was fun. But I don't go back to the system that much these days because I have so much new to play. But if you have the time in your life and you want to go back and experience these games on a system that is, the Switch is way better, but I will always love my Wii U. I think it's a really cool system. Also, if you're a collector, if you have a rather Nintendo system, come on, go for it. The price is something that is kind of iffy, because the price on the Wii U hasn't really dropped much. I haven't seen used Wii U consoles for relatively inexpensive. I've started to see the prices drop on Wii U games, but consoles themselves, so here's the thing. I would say at this point, I would personally want, and this is not based on any sort of realistic price that you can find, as far as I know. I mean, I could be wrong. I frequently am, but I would probably, if you could grab yourself a Wii U for like $100, $150, that's a steal. You will get that many dollars worth of entertainment out of it if you're a fan of Nintendo's games. Just there's no question about it. There's just so much good stuff on it. And even though some of it has come out on the Switch, there's still other stuff out there for you to get on the system and really deep dive into its eShop, because there's a lot of really good content, original games and virtual console. There's a lot of really good content on the Wii U eShop that's well worth your time and well worth tracking down. So I think I just spent a lot of time answering your question, Rob, and I hope that everybody else has gotten something out of it. And if I forgot about anything, any really great Wii U games that are only exclusive to that platform, please write in and let me know. And I'll pass that information along to Rob on Twitter, or just hit me up on Twitter and he'll probably see it because we're Twitter friends or whatever. So, yeah, I love the Wii U, and for all of its missteps, including just one of the worst named consoles outside of the Xbox One X, boy, it's an interesting piece of Nintendo history, and I'm really glad I have it. Whew, all right, so let's see. The only thing left that I have to cover tonight is that it's time for the Summer Series. We started the next round of the Summer Series, I mean. We did round one, where Dan and I played Dick Tracy and Spider-Man for Sega Genesis. And Dan and I came up with a huge list of games that we wanted to nominate for the Summer Series. We each picked three to put forth for you guys to vote on. We threw it up on the Geekade Facebook, the Stone Age Gamer Facebook, and both Geekade's and Stone Age Gamer's Twitter feeds. And we asked you to vote on the games, and the voting is concluded, and Dan and I will be playing the top two games with the most votes. So the games that were up for voting that we will not be playing in last place was Lord of the Sword for Sega Master System, followed by Drill Dozer for GBA. Kind of bums me out. I really wanted to play that game. Goonies 2 for the NES and Kid Chameleon for the Genesis, which means that the two games that we will be playing are Gremlins 2 for the Nintendo Entertainment System and Echo the Dolphin for Sega Genesis, which Dan is thrilled about. Because Dan hates Echo the Dolphin, and I nominated that one again, not only because I think it would be funny to make Dan play it, because I have always been fascinated by that game. And Gremlins 2 is another interesting one. I should have done this research before I started recording, that somebody wrote into the Waveback Music Podcast about the music for Gremlins 2 being really impressive. And so I went and downloaded a bunch of it, and he was right. It's got some really cool music. So I have no idea what the game plays like, but I'm genuinely excited for it. Gremlins 2 was one of Dan's pulls, I think, for something to go up for the vote. Yeah, Dan did Lord of the Sword, Kid Chameleon. Was that his and Gremlins 2? And I definitely did Drill Dozer and Echo the Dolphin and Goonies 2. So yeah, those were his. So that's going to be fun. I am excited to play those games. I'll probably start playing them the moment I hit stop on this recording. So that's probably going to be the rest of my night. So I think that's all I have. I guess I really don't have that much more to talk about without Dan here, but that's fine because I've been talking straight for, I've been recording for 34 minutes, so I've been speaking for a solid half an hour and my throat is starting to feel it, so I miss my co-host. Fortunately, he will be back next week. So yeah, that's it. That's our show. Thank you everyone for joining us today. Sorry it was a weird truncated experience, but sometimes holidays and family will do that. Once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can also like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris, that's Geekade K-R-I-S, and Dan is available at Geekade Dan, that's D-A-N. In case you don't know how to spell Dan. If you're interested in more information about anything I discussed here tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher. Or if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. I'd like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, even though he won't be editing this episode this week because he just moved. But he'll be back next week as well, and making this show listenable for all you folks as usual. And, of course, I'd like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme song, Chubby Chubby Chip Chip. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp, or his own website, which we have a link to in the show notes. Again, always remember to keep your eyes on Geekade.com for even more fresh, original content. Join us next week when Dan and I will be essentially ripping off wholesale something I heard on another podcast that I thought would be a really fun thing for us to talk about. The NES Classic Edition has just been re-released into the wild, so if you missed it the first time around, feel free to go out there and grab them. I hear they're about as easy to find as the Super NES Classic Editions were, which was to say not the easiest things in the world, but they're on shelves. You know, they're out there. I've seen plenty of them. So the NES Classic Edition is back out there. You can go into stores and get them, thank goodness. And so I thought it would be really cool, and so did the people on the Power Pros contest podcast, which is where I got this idea from. What if there was an NES Classic Edition Volume 2? What 30 games would we want to put on that? And that excludes the 30 games that were included on the original NES Classic Edition. So Dan and I are each going to come up with a list and try to figure out what we think should go on the non-existent NES Classic Edition Volume 2. So I think that's going to be a really fun show. And that's it, everybody. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you all for your support. We've had a couple of people donate to the tip jar link that's in our show notes, which, honest to goodness, that means the world to us. Thank you guys very, very much for that. We don't do this show to make money, but every now and then we do things like conventions and whatnot. The whole website does cost us, so it is very cool when people are just generous enough to donate a couple of bucks. So thank you, everybody who has done that so far. That's just really, really means the world to us. So thanks again for listening. That's it, everybody. Keep playing games.